I'm Rodney Ancaro. Welcome to the Educators SA podcast series, all about the South Australian resources for the Australian curriculum. In this episode, you'll hear from Neil Piggott and Russell Watt. They have led the development of the humanities and social sciences resources. To get us started, Neil and Russell shared a bit about their teaching and education backgrounds.
I'm Neil, and I've had over 40 years of teaching. I've taught for 6 to 10 years in a multitude of schools. I've had lots of curriculum development leadership positions in science, social justice, English literacy, maths numeracy, and 15 years in deputy positions with classroom responsibilities. I spent 2 years at the Felixstowe District Office as the district coordinator, supporting the leader and the R12 site leaders in 20 sites. I have taught HASS in all classrooms and presented workshop sharing units in civics and citizenship and history using a really integrated approach which values high order thinking. For me, civics and history have been my lifelong interest areas, and in 2008 I had this class of 8 male students in year 5 who were amazingly clued into geography. And geography wasn't one of my strengths. And after that year, it suddenly became one, because these kids, all year, they were just bringing in stuff all the time about geography. They knew all countries of the world, etc., etc. And they read widely, and they were absolutely fascinated with a particular geographical challenge, which was urbanisation in major cities at year 5. From that point on, my interest in teaching and learning about geography has joined that of history and civics.
Thanks, Neil. What about you, Russell?
Thinking back, I had a history teacher at Uber Agricultural High School by the name of Diane Cody, and she was just like, I idolised her. She was fantastic. I had her for year 11 history, and from that point on, there was this underlying urge that I really wanted to be a history teacher. And then in my 20s, I went to university and studied that, and since then I've worked sort of across a few different schools. So started really cut my teeth out in Port Pirie, and then moved into Murray Bridge, and then to Mount Compass, and then 3 years ago I took up my first leadership job at Goulburn District College. So there I've really got to know across different areas of the SACE, and a lot of the disciplines that we will sort of look at within the humanities. I suppose, yeah, I love the humanities and find that they are the most engaging way to teach literacy and numeracy through content that, if taught well, really connects with kids, and it can get them so excited. So a lot of my teaching practice has been around, you know, getting kids to learn through lived experience. So I've had year 8s who are walking through the school chanting medieval chants, I suppose, you know, Mio Vultus Onie, Domine Recrea, just to put themselves in the position of a flagellant during the Middle Ages. And we've had the lights turned off and the light cracking through the tables as the kids sit underneath to think what it would have been like for a child during the Holocaust hiding from Nazis, while also developing, you know, a lot of literacy and a real passion for learning. So I suppose, yeah, that's me. And then moving into a leadership role, I've really enjoyed working in the North. Get a lot of really new teachers out in the North who are so keen and so altruistic and really want to make things the best that they can for our kids. And I've enjoyed working with those teachers to help them become, you know, an outstanding group of educators that we have in the North.
Why are you so passionate about HASS, and why is it so important for students?
The thing about HASS is, and not to knock English, but we always joke as history teachers or as HASS teachers that humanities is English but interesting, in the sense that, you know, rather than dealing with canon texts, we get the opportunity to deal with amazing stories of amazing people and also some pretty average people. And the beauty of the humanities is that we can understand why we're here as a society and learn from these massive mistakes that we've made to develop a kinder, more resilient, more academic, generally more successful society. And so that's what I love about the humanities.
I'm going to start by saying that I'm really passionate about teaching and learning. And I see HASS as actually pulling all of that passion almost together, and it's a great subject to teach and a great one to learn about. For me, the humanities are really connected to English or language, with whatever language in Australia, that's generally English. But also, I really think it has big connection with the arts, and I'm really into the arts. I think the humanities, like English, like the arts, they're all about understanding relationships, engaging with different thinking, different perspectives, and there's lots and lots of problem solving to do, which is about the real world. In HAS, we learn to better engage with and better understand and challenge some of those views, and, you know, challenge some of the fake news. I think HAS helps us to work towards being better people, better citizens in a community. And it's about the real world, and it helps to link things back to what the students and the families and people in general do in their real world. So that's HAS is a real world sort of subject, and it puts everything together. It gives relevance to those worlds, and I think that's really wonderful about it.
Given the COVID year we've had, that whole notion of society and where we fit within society has been highlighted even more. So let's talk about the resources that have been developed to date so far, because, you know, we know this is a three-year project, so there's going to be more resources developed. And the purpose of this project has been around to develop resources that are relevant to teachers and useful to teachers, whether they're experienced or just starting. So I guess if I go on the website and I have a look at the scope and sequence document, what would I find in there? What are the big things in there that you'd like to talk to us about?
First of all, it's organised into history, geography, civics and citizenship, economics and business. So they are the sort of four sub-strands. And obviously the job that we're doing is to try and take the Australian curriculum and make a South Australian version of the scope and sequence. Also in there you'll find the inquiry and skills, so the things that you want students to be able to do. And then you'll find the knowledge and understanding section, which is about the content descriptors which help deliver the concepts of HAS. And HAS is a bit complex in the fact that every substrand has a different set of concepts. And the concepts, in our view, are the things that we want to drive the work that's in our scope and sequence. That's certainly what happens in the Australian curriculum. The achievement standards are very similar to what's in the Australian curriculum now. They might look slightly different, but there's not a lot of difference. The inquiry and skills, inquiry part of HAS is really, really significant. So that has been organised in bands right across R-10. So you've got R2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And what happens is that at the end of that band, you know, this is where you want students to, the skills you want students to have when they're inquiring into HAS content. The section that's been most, in the R6 one, most modified has been the knowledge and understanding section, so the content descriptors, because we felt in the R6 that there was a lot of work for teachers to have to do where they had to go away and research what does that word mean, you know, what are they driving at here. So we tried to write the content descriptors in a way with, they're a bit bigger than probably Australian curriculum in R6, but it's all about trying to write them so that teachers can just read them and go, yep, there's an example, I get it, so that they don't have to spend lots of time trying to really unpack it. When you look at the R6 scope and sequence, you've got your achievement standards, you've got your inquiry skills in bands, and then you've got, per year level, you've got your content descriptors.
From year 7 to 10, the disciplines are defined into four areas, as Neil's addressed. So you've got your history, geography, civics and citizenship, economics and business. As you move into a SACE level, there are tons of subjects which students can study. So we go into philosophy, society and culture, legal studies, politics and power, ancient studies, modern history. So there's this huge opportunity, depending on where a student is, for them to be studying HAS in a range of different lenses at senior school level. To develop that and to develop the skills that they'll need, the scope and sequence is designed in such a way that it allows teachers to really get to the core of some of the key disciplines which students need to build a base understanding of to be successful in a range of subjects. And I suppose that's actually beyond humanities subjects and the SAFEs as well. So the scope and sequence lays out a lot of the skills that we need our kids to develop, analytical skills, critical and creative thinking, so that they can become really successful learners in science or maths or English. Even if a kid doesn't go on with the humanities, doesn't go on to do an arts degree or a political science degree or a geography degree or whatever it may be, they are, through the skills laid out in the scope and sequence, given an opportunity to become really deep and rich learners. And beyond that, there's some content, which is just good fun. That is briefly explained for a teacher so that they can have some ideas as to, hey, this is a really exciting concept, or this is a really exciting period in history. And it's something that's going to engage kids and pique their interest so that they can develop those skills through the content.
And so if I went in and opened up the scope and sequence now, I could readily use that as a way of planning my whole learning program around HASS.
Yeah, probably the beauty of the scope and sequence is if a teacher goes on to the Australian Curriculum website, it's a massive beast, and you're looking at link after link to try and find your way through, and you're looking at terms like substrand and strand and band and content descriptor and achievement standard and across year levels and across disciplines. The scope and sequence sort of takes the most important parts of that and puts it in a nice little tidy document so that a teacher can read through that, glance at that, and get a key understanding as to what they should be doing in the classroom.
So it does a lot of the hack work for me as a teacher in terms of interpreting the Australian curriculum, but at the same time it doesn't lose anything from the Australian curriculum.
No, and what it does is it's one thing for an experienced teacher, a humanities specialist, to teach what they know. But we need to be realistic about the fact that teachers come and go and have family circumstances or whatever the case may be. Teachers teach out of field. And this document is really there to help those teachers who are picking up classes at the last minute or are doing things sort of out of area, which will empower them to be really good HASS teachers. They're already great teachers. This gives them the opportunity to use their pedagogy in a different discipline.
Yeah, one of the big issues that primary teachers have is that they'd have to teach, they're teaching 6 or 7 learning areas, and you know, you can't be magnificent at all your different areas. So I guess what the scope and sequence does for primary teachers, we hope, is really put it in a simple little package so that it's easily accessible, easily understood, and you don't have to spend ages researching.
So as well as the scope and sequence in the HASS area, you've already got some units of work that are up there. For someone who hasn't seen those, can you draw us a bit of a picture about what a unit of work looks like? What would I find in there?
All the units have been written as research-based best advice. So these units are all about the writer's best advice to support teachers and learners achieve depth and rigour. And I guess that's what we're really going for in the other 6, is to get a lot more depth in all 4 substrands. Because I think what we've got in the reality of a primary teacher is they might be really strong in history, but that's it. And it's really like you've actually got 4 subjects in one that you've got to teach and you've got to know and understand. The R6 units are all organised into 4 sections, and there's some similarities with the 710. First of all, there's like a first page, or sort of equivalent to a page, is a unit summary section with the overarching description. It's got the learning intentions and it's got the learning sequence. The primary units, we've divided them into sort of what we call chunks of learning, which have got a beginning and an end, and then an assessment summary. For me personally, as a writer and as a teacher, that page, I can look at it and get the big picture of what the unit's about, and it's really crucial. The second section is everything's drawn from our scope and sequence. So you've got information about what are the content descriptors for this unit, what are the inquiry skills for this unit or this band, and they're always the same for no matter what, whether it's geography, history, civics, whatever. So there's that information, and the third section is the unit delivery part, and that's really big, and that's done in, you go back to your chunks. So in general, we might have about 5 or 6 learning intentions, and then you devote the first chunk to maybe the first 2 learning intentions. These chunks are organized into 3 columns. The first column is the teaching and learning advice. The second column, which I really, really like, is called teacher tips and alerts. And that's where I've put lots of teach information where they can go into a website so they don't have to go and hunt it. And the third column is what we've called evidence of understanding advice. And I think the 7, 10 have got all of those same 3 sections. And the last 4th section in the units are the summative assessment advice. As you go down in the chunks, there's formative assessment information all the way through, because it's about, if this is the learning intention you're working for, then does every child, have they got that? To what extent have they nailed that? And when you get down to the end, they should be able to do the summative assessment task. Sometimes we didn't even put one in because we felt that all the information you actually get through just formatively checking as you go along. The other bits in that 4th section is we've got a little section on safety considerations, you know, like internet safety, etc.
Sounds really comprehensive. Russell, similar to in the secondary units?
Yeah, in a broad sense. So if the scope and sequence is the what, the units are the how. And it's really important to note that these units of work are advice, not gospel. So within the humanities, there's a whole range of depth studies. And any teacher can choose what depth study they want to have a go at. And I know that as a Year 8 history teacher, I've had a go at nearly every one of those depth studies across a multitude of years. We've picked out a few which we think will work really well, and we've provided a range of resources and pedagogies that will support learning. A lot of what we've written is based around the community of inquiry approach and around dialogic pedagogies, which is a word that comes up time and time again. What we're trying to do is find a way to encourage teachers, regardless of their background, to have a chat with their kids about some really exciting stuff and develop some skills as they go. It doesn't matter if you're an experienced teacher or a brand new teacher, these units of work have some really handy hints that you could use in your classroom. And as a beginning teacher, you might pick this up and decide that you're going to use it verbatim, and that's fantastic. As a proficient teacher, you might pick the eyes out of it. And as a really experienced teacher and really experienced practitioner, you might find a couple of resources in there that just make you rethink what you're doing. So at every level of your career, these units are designed in a way that you can take what you need from them and create an exciting classroom which engages students. It's also the case that we've separated ours into the 4 disciplines. HASS can be taught with the 4 disciplines together, and certain schools do that, but a majority of schools will have teachers who are either history specialists or geographers or legal eagles or whatever the case may be. Not everybody is across all of the disciplines, and so by breaking it into the different disciplines into 5-week units, or as we move into World War I and World War II at year 9 and 10, it'll be 10-week units. What we're allowing schools to do is structure their program in such a way that they can take the best of this and use it, and also take some of the teacher tips and some of the pedagogies that we think are really, really helpful using some of the scaffolds and adjust those. For example, we've looked at Vikings, but we haven't looked at Shogun Japan. If you're a school where Japanese is the language, then you're probably going to go with Shogun Japan as your depth study, and that's totally fine. In the Vikings unit, there's a range of literacy scaffolds that you can use and then adapt those 2 resources so that it can support learning in another context.
Both of you are clearly highly experienced practitioners yourselves, but in developing these resources, what strikes me is you've engaged a whole lot of other practitioners, a whole lot of other teachers as well. Do you want to talk just a little bit about the process you've used and how you've, I guess, captured the expertise of the field in this?
I'm in a really unique perspective as a curriculum manager. I did not start as a curriculum manager in this team. I started as a writer. And so for most of 2020, I have been 0.5 a curriculum writer and 0.5 back at my school. And so I've been balancing those two roles and trying to implement what I'm writing and flick out what I'm writing to the teachers in my team and say, hey, does this work for you? So that's been a really positive process and something that we've done across sites. We've had teachers from across South Australia. This is not Adelaide centric. Teachers from the Riverland, from the Mid-North, from wherever, feeding back into us how they think these units need to be developed. We've had teachers who have been coming out of the classroom to have a go at writing these things. And as a team of teachers, we've been constructing units which are basically for teachers by teachers.
And I think the primary situation is pretty similar. I had four co-writers who would connect with their particular sites and take units, bits of units out or some ideas about pedagogy or whatever and talk to their colleagues within their school. So that was sort of one set. There's also a bit more of a specialist set of people that I've connected with. So I've actually worked with a person on a regular basis to look at the Aboriginal perspective within our units and, you know, seeking his advice, and he has connected me with other people as a result of that. A second person that I've connected with a lot is an editor, Margaret. I feel she really helped us transform what we did around assessment, because we had a whole lot of stuff happening and she refined that to make it work really well. And we've now taken that up to be, we've done that in every unit for 5 and 6, and we're going to continue to do that in units for part 4. Other people we've had connection with, we've met regularly via Zoom with the association people, representatives. There was another meetup we had with, I think, about 20 primary HASS teachers who were identified from across the state, and met with them to talk through and get feedback from them around the units. So there's actually lots and lots. And the final one for me now is that I'm connecting with the services on North Terrace, State Library, the art gallery, the museum, and trying to get them behind so that their work might actually drive some of the work that we're doing in HASS.
So you've drawn on expertise as you needed it. You're strongly engaged with practitioners, as you outlined. And from an educator's essay point of view, the highlight has been the way through all the learning areas that the associations have been engaged right from the start. So on the website at the moment, if I go in there, I can see the scope and sequence. I can see some units. What's the next stage of development? What are you working on at the moment?
In a high school setting, we have made the units for both year 7 and 8. And so now we just continue on with year 9 and year 10.
And for primary, we're working on year 3 and 4 units.
You've given us a lot of great information. So let's collect that and summarise it in terms of why do you think these resources are going to be so valuable to teachers?
One of the best things about these resources is that they're contextualised to South Australia. So often a teacher in South Australia will pick up, for example, a geography textbook, or they'll look online and they might be able to find some great examples of natural landscapes in the United States. They might even be able to find a fantastic spot in the eastern states where they can take their students out for a geographical study for practical field work. But what's really been lacking to this point is that work contextualised for South Australia. What these units do is they put South Australia front and centre of the curriculum in a way that connects the curriculum to the real world experience of our kids. So for example, at year 8, in a study of landforms and landscapes, a lot of what is online is based around Wilson's Promontory, which is fine if you live near there. But in South Australia, we have the Flinders Ranges, we have the Narrecourt Caves, we have UNESCO World Heritage Sites on our doorstep, and these units have been able to give teachers the opportunity to really explore those in a South Australian context.
Absolutely agree with that. I think another real strength is that as feedback comes in from from teachers across the state, you know, we can actually take units off and make improvements to them so they're living, as opposed to they're there for 10 years and no one can touch them, because that's the end point.
We're trying to build a world-class education system, and we already have world-class teachers, and we're hoping that these units will provide them with effectively world-class resources contextualised to what we need to do here in South Australia.
And is there anything else you wanted to particularly share with us?
We would love feedback. You know, we want feedback about these units. What bits work? Was it clear to you what you had to do? We need that information. Where it wasn't clear, or that you felt there were some issues with it in terms of its delivery to your set of students, then we need that information. So really invite a teacher feedback to the writing team on what worked well and what parts need improvement.
So these are living documents that can continue to evolve mm-hmm. over time.
We've got a real commitment to making sure that these units don't just set and forget. The nature of the humanities is that as humans we change, and so these units have to change as well. So they're still fantastic resources in 2023, 2024 and beyond, and that requires teachers to let us know what's working and what's not via the intranet.
Neil and Russell, thank you so much for sharing the story behind these resources. And I guess for anyone who's listening to this, if you haven't had a chance to look yet, go online, have a look at the resources. You'll get a clear understanding of what we've been talking about today. So thank you both very much.
Thanks, Tom.